Good afternoon. Senate Judiciary Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Friday, March 4th, 2022. The time is 1:33 in the afternoon. We're meeting in State Capitol Room number 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Keel, Senator Schauer, Senator Hughes, and myself as Chair, Senator Holland. Senator Myers is excused today. Senator Myers is excused. Let's see, we do have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Nancy, our recording secretary, and Alex, our moderator for today. And as a reminder, please silence your cell phones. Today, we're going to continue discussion on the governor's crime bills. My intent is to complete public testimony on both bills today first, then allow members to continue asking questions of the administration with whatever time we may have left. We'll continue exploring these bills next week with the hope to develop satisfactory committee substitutes by next Friday. So first up today is Senate Bill 187, back before the committee. Senate Bill 187 is related to sex offenses. This is the fourth hearing on Senate Bill 187, and at this time, I'm going to open public testimony on Senate Bill 187. Public testimony is now open. Does any member of the public in the room wish to offer testimony on Senate Bill 187? Mr. Ignell, if you'd please come up to the presenter's table.
All right. Thank you, Chair Holland.
State your name, your affiliation, and begin your 3 to 4 minutes of public testimony.
Will do. Thank you. My name is David Ignell. I'm from Juneau, Alaska, and I represent myself.
Thank you.
I have prepared comments here. It's not off the cuff like Mr. Schauer is so good at. And so I hope to get through the points I want to raise. We are in an election year. A sitting Republican governor trying to get reelected is pushing for legislation addressing sex crimes. Brings back memories of 2010, doesn't it? Politically, it's a no-brainer. Sex crimes are an issue that bind the passions of Democrats and Republicans. They raise strong emotions, as both Senator Schauer and Senator Keel demonstrated here on Wednesday. There's immense political power in the subject of sex crimes. On the other side of this legislation is your duty to protect the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, the protection of our individual freedoms, the right to a fair trial, the right to a jury of our peers, and above all, the fundamental right to be protected from government tyranny. I'm testifying today because law-abiding citizens have become victims of this political juggernaut and tyranny, completely innocent people who lead good, moral lives and without any material blemishes. The case of Thomas Jack of Hoonah, which you all know about, is case in point. The tyranny can be subtle. Think of many state officials in our criminal justice system who want to advance their careers, make more money, be recognized among their peers, social workers who want to become supervisors, police sergeants who want to become lieutenants, prosecutors who want to become district attorneys, and judges who want to sit on the Supreme Court. All along the way, laws and ethics are compromised here and there. It all adds up. Leading the charge on sex crimes is a proven way to get ahead in the state government. Just ask our governors. Conversely, standing up against the manipulation and abuse of sex crime laws can lead to disastrous career results. Just ask Julie Willoughby and Kathy Munoz. I want to tell you a disturbing story that developed across the street from us 10 years ago inside the Diamond Courthouse. A citizen sitting on the grand jury heard testimony from two women and voted to indict a man for sexual crimes. 30 minutes later, the citizen entered the transit center across from Merchants Wharf and saw these two women. Their demeanor was completely different, laughing, giggling, and he heard one of them say, "If you want to get rid of somebody you don't want around, accuse them of rape, take them to the grand jury, and it will be all said and done," unquote. But the story gets worse, much worse. This citizen went back to the courthouse and told the clerk what he had observed. He wanted to change his vote to indict the man. He felt that two women, in his words, had been, quote, gaming the system, unquote. He was brought in to see a judge with a prosecutor present. The citizen told his story to them, but then nothing happened. He wasn't contacted by the DA or law enforcement. The women were never charged with perjury. The DA did not withdraw the indictment and went ahead and prosecuted the case. Apparently in Juneau, it's okay to commit felony perjury and bring false charges against somebody if the DA thinks they can get away with a conviction. The message is clear. It's okay to game the system in sex crime cases because it's a path to career advancement. If this story doesn't send chills down your spine, you shouldn't be sitting in your chairs up there on a body as important as the Senate Judiciary Committee. We can't elect our prosecutors or our judges. The only state officials we can elect are you legislators and the governor. You have legislative oversight of both the Alaska court system and the Department of Law. Egregious violations of public oaths and constitutional rights are taking place in these public agencies, but nothing is being done. Mr. Jack continues to sit in a prison cell 12 years after being falsely accused. Incredibly, he's the only victim in this case. The governor has known all of this for the last 2.5 years and has done nothing. He acts like his political career is more important than his moral and legal obligation to protect the freedom and constitutional rights of his constituents. We the people depend on you to pass laws that put our individual liberties above all else. If the prosecutors, judges, and governor won't carry out their oaths, then you shouldn't be passing legislation that weaponizes government tyranny. It's that simple. So think about what you're doing with SB 187 and the additional power it will give all those government officials looking to make a name for themselves. Where are the checks and balances against tyranny and the abuses of power that were outright flaunted in Mr. Jack's case? How are you going to prevent other innocent and good people like him from being swept up in a web of passion and politics? I hope each of you is willing to risk your political careers to save your constituents from government tyranny. It's your oath, after all. Thank God for dedicated former politicians like Kathy Munoz, who had the courage to speak up on behalf of both her Republican and Democrat constituents who complained about manipulation of domestic violence laws. Thank God for dedicated attorneys like Juneau attorney Julie Willoughby, who had the courage to call out prosecutors who overstepped constitutional and ethical boundaries in sex crime cases. Each of you has a difficult choice to make: go along with the political flow or take a stand against government tyranny. I hope you will find courage from what must be done by following the example of Kathy and Julie, two remarkable women who are true Alaskans. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Chair Holland.
Thank you, Mr. Ignell. Next up, is there anyone in the room who cares to offer public testimony? Ms. Katie Boats? Please state your name and your affiliation, if any, and begin your 3 to 4 minutes.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Katie Boats. I'm a constituent here in Juneau, speaking on behalf of myself. And if I may, sir, it's a pleasure to be back in the building and seeing your wonderful faces. So I must admit, this is a drop of the hat for 187, but I just ask that you guys follow through with any decisions that you guys make regarding 187, to be mindful of victim-oriented and being victim first. You know, after being sexually abused myself at the age of 12, I'm still dealing with the trauma, and I'm 34 years old right now. In fact, my therapist often remind me that it's, you know, your struggle is because of your childhood trauma and because of being raped and whatnot. I was just briefly looking at the bill, and when it comes to the sex registration for the predators, I kind of ask that you guys keep it long-term, just because we are still number one as far as sexual assault here in the nation, and if you never know if they're going to have a relapse, if we do it again, or how many times they're going to re-victimize people. So, I kind of asked if longer than 15, more like for life, just because you never know what's gonna happen. They may have a bad day and decide to, you know, be victimized and stuff. So, keeping it short, just keeping it victim oriented, and I'm more than willing to help you guys, with both of the bills, really. So, all
right, thank you, Miss Boats. And thank you to both people who are able to appear in person today. Is there anyone else in the room who wishes to offer public testimony? I'll check with Alex. I see a potential. Is that a caller? Is that that's a public testimony online? All right. So next step, it appears no one else in the room. Now we go to, looks like Annie Cooey, who is online. If you can hear me, please state your name, any affiliation, and your location, and begin 3 to 4 minutes of public testimony.
Hello. Yes, I am here. Hello, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Annie Cooey. I am from Anchorage, Alaska, and today I am representing myself. I am calling from New York, as that is where I currently attend college, but I was born and raised in Anchorage, Alaska, and I graduated from West High School, class of 2021, summa cum laude. In June of 2021, I was raped. He was 21 and I was 17. In that moment, I did what I was always told to do. I said no, stopped, pushed him away, yet froze after a while, like many victims of assault do. When I found the courage to make my report to Anchorage Police Department, the detective who helped me reassured me that what happened to me was wrong and that I had a case. It was almost a week later when a detective assigned on my case called to inform me that my case would not be further investigated, as Alaskan law stipulates that rape is only punishable when obvious force and violence is used. I believe what happened to me was wrong, and I deserve justice, yet I know I will never get it because Alaskan law prevents it. I bravely testify before you today because I believe that no victim should again be denied justice like I was. I am testifying because as of 2021 and almost every year before that, Alaska has the worst sexual violence statistics in this nation. I am testifying because the law as it stands does not support victims, and this bill will change it so that victims like me who froze out of fear and shock can get justice. I am testifying because I am urging you to also be brave and pass this bill for the good of Alaska. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Cooey. And it looks like we have no one else left online to testify. So at this point, I'm going to close public testimony on Senate Bill 187. Public testimony is now closed. And at this time, we'll also set 187 aside for the moment. Now we're going to bring Senate Bill 189 back before the committee. Senate Bill 189 is related to sex trafficking. This is the third hearing for SB 189. We're going to open public testimony to SB 189. Public testimony is now open. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to offer public testimony on Senate Bill 189? Mr. Ignell.
Yeah, I'll just speak off the cuff a little bit on this one. My comments are exactly the same for this one as they were for the last one. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is David Ignell, Juneau, Alaska, representing myself. I will submit comments for the record to Nancy on this, and rather than read the same thing over again, I don't see the point in that. You know, it'll be on the record. You know, I just want to say in response to the last two witnesses who testified, I mean, my heart goes out to victims of sexual assault. And I can tell you that there are members of Mr. Jack's family who have been raped, and he was an integral part of their protection system that was taken away from them. This family understands the pain of rape, and I do too. I've got two daughters, you know, I get it, but we need to have protections here, but it can't be. I see a lot of stuff happening for political reasons and not for the real reasons. You know, we need to stomp out this, but I know that the DA has this thing where they want the voice of women to be believed, and that's true, but the DA has a job to weed out the ones that aren't real, you know, the cases like I just quoted. I mean, there's some people that have an agenda to get rid of people, and they see how they can do it because the prosecution and the legal system just rolls over. So that's all I'll say about these.
Well, Mr. Ignell, public testimony is, I believe, is a chance for the public to get up, get on the mic, and speak at us. And, you know, and I appreciate public coming out and doing it. Would you entertain a question from a committee member?
Absolutely.
Senator Schauer.
Thank you for the indulgence, Mr. Chair. David, we've spoken before. You know where I stand on this. I'm very interested in this case because I do see both sides. There is we have to stomp out domestic violence and sexual assault because we are number one in the nation, and not in a good way. At the same time, you're right. We have a duty to protect innocent until proven guilty. And if you find data that would be exculpatory, or that's not the right word, but I was close at language today. Not so good off the cuff, I guess. That we balance both sides of the equation, right? I mean, Lady Justice is supposed to be blind until you find the truth. So I see both sides of that. My question to you would be for the chair, and it's something we can take offline for the length of the discussion, is as you look at these bills, there may be areas that we need to do better. And so while I heard your pitch about, you know, we may not want to pass these or do something different, what I would also ask you is if you look at them, or if you haven't, if you could, where are areas that we still need to fix? Because what I don't want to do is completely stop an effort that would still be needed, where maybe we do need changes. And so I guess what I'm asking, Mr. Chair, is offline, if maybe David could look at these and provide feedback to the committee on areas that we still need to do or that are good. And if there's areas that you find that clearly maybe aren't appropriate outside of the politics, that would be helpful, because there is a political problem, right? But there is also an actual statutory problem of things we might need. So that's all really, I guess it was more of a question to Mr. Ignall for a response to the committee, if he would be willing to do so.
Well, I really appreciate, through the chair, I'm not used to this stuff.
No one ever does.
I really appreciate your comments. And I want all of you to know that, you know, once Mr. Jack is back with his family and free, I'm willing to devote my energy and any skills that you perceive that I have towards eliminating sex trafficking in this state. It bothers me. You know, and to make our streets safer and our homes safer for our citizens, especially for our women. And yes, I mean, I've gone through these bills a little bit. I mean, they're long, 20 some pages, but you know, the governor's summary had some, you know, pretty good overviews. And I've seen, you know, I'm like getting ready for this, and I've got, okay, I got 3 minutes. You know, I got to give this from the 30,000 foot level, not the 2,000 foot level. And I'm more than happy to work with any of you on coming up with, you know, sharing my ideas. I mean, I've jotted down a few on each bill of potential problems that I see. And yes, I'm more than willing to. I mean, this is why I'm back in Alaska, is to dedicate my, I mean, this bothers me. This is my hometown. I grew up here. And this is not the Alaska that I'm proud of. You know, it's like that Bob Dylan song, you know, shame to live in a land where justice is just a game in the hurricane. And that's how I feel. Justice has become a game here, and it's time that we took back control of it. And I agree with some comments that you've said, Mr. Schauer, or Senator Schauer, earlier about, you know, maybe we need a constitutional convention to look at some. I mean, it bothers me. I mean, for 2.5 years, I've been trying to get people's attention, and everyone just looks the other way about this wrong. The facts are so egregious in Mr. Jack's case, but we don't elect our judges, and we don't elect our prosecutors. I did a whole report on that. I think we're only one of three states that doesn't elect our prosecutors. So, and those are New Jersey and Connecticut, or something like that, where it's dense population. So they're not held accountable, is the bottom line. We have this central location in Anchorage that tries to handle justice from a central location in Anchorage, and it just can't be done. I mean, Alaska, what is it, one resident per square mile? You can't do that from a central location. It's 1,400 miles from Barrow to Ketchikan, and that's all being centrally managed. And you know, then we've talked previously about the whole, I'll wrap up here real quick, about the whole Alaska Judicial Council and how they continually refuse to just solicit the opinion of Alaska Native tribes when it comes to judges. So anyway, that's all I'll say at this point. Thank you.
They're not letting you get away too quick, Mr. Ignell. Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you for your testimony. And I also want to thank Annie and also Katie. And with the sexual assault and problems being far too personal in my family, it is a problem here. And I do want you to know, though, that I've read your long and detailed emails, and having family in Huna, you know, I've paid extra close attention. And so I hear you on that matter, but I don't want to belittle what we're doing here. It's very important, and we have a serious problem in this state. I'm interested in any suggestions you have to the bill that relate to what you were saying that might cause extra, I think you used the word tyranny, and maybe where these things could be used. I don't know. Anything could be used for personal gain if somebody has bad motives. So I'm not sure if this bill, you know, if they're already doing what we're doing in this bill is going to make it worse or better, but along those lines. But for the actual bill itself, from the victim standpoint, if you could think of an actual person who is a victim of rape or sexual assault, I would like to know what you think of this bill. Do you think we should be toughening up? You're not obligated to respond to that because you're not on the stand. I'm just curious because your testimony is pretty much kind of warning us about the bills and passage of them. But yet I know you heard the testimony. You know there's a problem. And so as you bring forward suggestions to us, yes, give them on the case that you're working on that behalf. And so we're not promoting careers, but also, you know, your expertise and your insight as far as how we can help the sexual assault problem that we have in this state. It's a tricky balance because things could be abused, and we don't want to put innocent people behind bars. That's not my intention here. And I will say, you know, you can talk about it being an election year and being political, but I started working, you know, with the criminal division on this issue 3 or 4 years ago. It is pretty complicated, and we were looking at what other states were doing because we didn't want to tip the balance and lock up innocent people. So, yes, it happens to be an election year, but I don't really think that's the intent, and I'm going to give the administration the benefit of the doubt on that because this has been a several-year process, and it just happens to be 2022.
Senator Hughes, are you finished your public testimony? Rebuttal? No. And if you could just wrap it up, because we do have other people waiting to listen. But no, I just that's why I kind of like it, to where I don't want to mean public testimony. You just come and talk at us, but we're supposed to absorb what the public wants to give us.
Well, let me condense this. I think I can condense this down into 30 seconds, and I'll use an analogy that, you know, Senator Schauer can probably identify with. So let's say you build the best airplane. If you put the wrong pilot behind it, it's going to crash. And that's what you can do with these statutes. I mean, and frankly, from what I've seen, these statutes have been tweaked for, 15, 20 years trying to get it right. I mean, this problem has been recognized for a long time, and the statutes keep getting tweaked. And you can spend all this time and energy to design the perfect, and I'm more than happy to help you with that. But if we don't have the right people, if we don't have the balance that's necessary, then none of this works. And you get people like me coming up and going, wait a minute, you know. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Ignell. Is there anyone else in the room who wants to offer a public testimony? Katie Boats, if you please come up to the presenter's table. Once again, state your name, any affiliation, and put yourself on the record. Begin your 30 minutes of presentation. Okay, maybe 3 minutes.
3 minutes. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Katie Boats. I'm from Juneau, Alaska, speaking on behalf of myself. I am in favor of this bill, actually both bills, and again, reiterating. I'm more than willing to help you guys outside of here on both bills. When you guys were listening to this bill on Monday, I have a confession. I was listening when I wasn't supposed to because I have Bluetooth hooked up to my hearing aids, and I was driving when I was listening to the outline of this bill. And section 29, when I first heard it, I was really upset, I must admit, because school bus drivers were, you know, within dialogue, school bus drivers were mentioned within the guys' conversation, and I'm a school bus driver. That's what I do for a living. And it took me a while to calm down and to actually look at section 29 before I became confused. Because according to First Student regulation, we have to follow the federal mandates and the federal laws. So already what we're doing is before we even step foot in the driver's seat of a school bus driver, we already are mandated to have a background check, fingerprint, and a drug test. And if we fail any of those, we're not allowed to step, we're not allowed to be in the driver's seat for training. Now, this could be an extra safety measure, but I would hope that it's an extra safety measure in case the people fall between the cracks. But the reason why I was really upset was like, well, I hope the governor knows that we're already under federal laws, and, you know, why put in far too much work on my my manager and my safety officers to try to hire new drivers when we're short all over the state, even here in Juneau. So I just wanted to bring that to you guys' attention when it comes to this bill. It was really alarming when I saw that and when I heard that on Monday. But we are following places, we are following federal regulation. And I can tell you, because I travel for the company, the school bus company around Alaska, and I have traveled down in the lower 48. I think in Alaska, Kodiak, Fairbanks, and Ketchikan, the lower 48, it was Oregon, Seattle, Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Cherokee, New York. We all follow the same guideline as far as hiring process, and we don't want the wrong people transporting our most precious cargo. So just putting that out there. And I have talked to, I guess this part for both bills, I have talked to different constituents around the state, and there was one that lives here in Juneau. He always tries to remind me every single time, like, you guys come down to Juneau, hey, you cannot forget that females are sexual predators as well, and that most often the laws make sure that the females are not, like, in jail, I guess, is his way of putting it, where I'm trying to reassure him that we're trying to change the law to make sure that equal representation for both male and females as far as being, you know, the sexual predators and stuff. But I just wanted to throw it out there, otherwise I'm not keeping my word as far as, you know, advocating. And also, too, I have to, ever since I helped repeal SB 91, anyone that moved up to Alaska, I'm always reminding my new friends that move up here that we are number one as far as sexual assault and domestic abuse, and I always have to remind them that, you know, be careful and stuff. So I just ask that you keep in mind that, you know. Yeah.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you for providing public testimony on Senate Bill 189. All right, is there anyone else in the room who wants to provide public testimony? Seeing none, And I don't believe we have anyone online wishing to provide public testimony. So at this point, we'll close public testimony on Senate Bill 189. Public testimony is now closed, and 189 is still before us. Are there any further questions from the committee for the Department of Law on Senate Bill 189? I see Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There was great public testimony. Thank you. I do have a question into kind of some of the a little bit of the detail of the bill that we hadn't been able to cover in a previous hearing, if the Department of Law would be willing to respond.
Mr. Skidmore, do you care to take the presenter's table?
I am, of course, actively flipping to find the section of the bill I was interested in. There it is. Mr. Chairman, the question goes to page 5, which is definitions of some of the things in the trafficking statutes, and I think both sex trafficking and human trafficking. When it talks about services, resources, or other assistance, it explicitly includes lodging and transportation, but then excludes humanitarian aid to a victim of sex trafficking. And I certainly appreciate that we would not want to prosecute someone who gave someone a place to sleep, trying to get them out of a trafficking situation, knowing that they weren't out yet, that they might go back the next day. The flip side of the coin that I'm curious about is what prevents a trafficker from saying, oh no, the housing, the cot on the floor or whatever it is, and the rides were humanitarian aid. How do we differentiate those for purposes of making sure we get the genuine wrongdoers and not the people we're not after?
Thank you, Senator Keel. Mr. Skidmore, if you care to place yourself on the record, offer any insight on that.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of Senate Judiciary. Again, for the record, my name is John Skidmore. I'm the Deputy Attorney General for the Criminal Division. And through the chair, Senator Keel, the answer to your question is, first of all, it's a very good question. It would depend upon the investigation that is done by law enforcement. We would have to be determining who was it that was providing the aid, and then we would be looking at what was that person's connections to the victim in other respects. Is this someone that they just met? Is this a donation to a charitable organization? Is this, what exactly does this look like? And those are the types of factors that we would have to go through and sort out. I don't know that I can give you the specific example of where that's occurred, but again, I can tell you that when we drafted these sections, we were looking at national best practices, and one of the things that was highlighted in those is that you don't want to be criminalizing those individuals that are helping victims. You only want to go after the people that are providing the assistance that is in further support of the sex trafficking itself. And I would note that for the definitions, it's important to go back to the statute itself. And in that circumstance, it is providing assistance in furtherance of the violation for sex trafficking. And so that's the other aspect we would look at. Is the lodging that is provided in furtherance of sex trafficking, or is this simply trying to help the person out? Those are the types of factors that we would need to be evaluating when we look at the specific facts that the investigation revealed.
Senator Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's an excellent point, in furtherance of. I will need to chew on it a little further. My concern is that the trafficker has an opportunity to say, oh, I was just helping, right? I wasn't, the difference between do it or you're out in the street and, oh, let me help you out with a place to sleep.
Let me help you get out of the street.
Is a very thin line, I'll think further on it.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Are there any other questions for the committee on Senate Bill 189? Senator Hughes?
I don't really have a question. I continue to have the concern, I brought it up the other day, and I don't know how to address it because it would be difficult as well. And that has to do with these related services that I'm guessing there are times when services are being provided, and let's say someone who owns an apartment building and begins to be suspicious that there may be activity going on and maybe even comes to the conclusion that it is, but hey, it's filling up some apartment rooms and they're getting rent. Is there anything under our current law that that person would hold some liability for not reporting it?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, there is not a statutory obligation for what are commonly referred to as mandatory reporters. It's not people that would be having contact or that might be in those situations. So their failure to report such suspicions to law enforcement does not in and of itself get them into trouble. They can only become targeted for prosecution if we're able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that they actually were aware of and consciously disregarded the substantial and unjustifiable risk that that's what was actually occurring there. And I would suggest or submit to you that a suspicion or a concern that maybe that doesn't fit that definition in my mind. It's going to take more than that before someone could be prosecuted for that sort of offense. But to your specific question, no, there's not an obligation that they report, and they can't be held criminally liable for that.
And the follow-up, because I actually said it, they were suspicious, and then they actually came to conclude that was what was happening. So you had said at that point, then they do have a duty to report?
No. Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I'm not indicating that at any time somebody has a duty to report. The question would be, are they operating or owning a place of prostitution in that circumstance? And if they have concerns about that, they may, as a landlord, want to take actions with their tenant. They may want to talk to their tenant about what they're doing. They may want to seek to evict a tenant if they think the tenant's engaged in illegal activities, but there's no obligation that they report that to the police. And I think that an individual who owns a property that's trying to take appropriate actions to ensure that there's not illegal conduct happening there, one option could be to contact the police, but they're not obligated to. Another action could be to try to evict them. A third action could be attempting to persuade the people to stop the illegal activity. There are many different paths they could take. And so long as those paths are done, again, I come back to this concept that they are not doing something that's really supporting or furthering that particular conduct.
And one more on that.
Senator Hughes.
So other than just a public education, that if you see something, report it. Like we see, I think there's signs like that at the airport kind of thing. Other than that, you have no other suggestion of because we've heard testimony that this is happening right under our noses. It's happening right here in our state, and we're having trouble eradicating it and tightening up these laws. It might help, but you still have to know who's doing what and who to go after. So I'm just trying to think if there's anything that we can do to help these victims more proactively identify the situations and get it reported.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, please don't misunderstand. I'm not saying there aren't other steps that we can take. I'm simply trying to describe what the bill does. If you were to ask me what would I want to do to help people understand that, I would tell you that I think there needs to be a media campaign that is sponsored by the state. I can think of a number of different organizations or entities within the state that could certainly pursue such a campaign. And those campaigns should be a public education campaign to let people know that this is a problem, where it exists, what are the signs to look for. I think there are any number of steps that can be taken there. That's just not part of the change in the criminal laws that's proposed in the bill.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Senator Hughes. Senator Q.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I lied. One more. We got a lengthy comment letter just today, and I haven't read it yet. And I the heading suggested talks about statutes of limitations.
Okay.
So the question would be, I know the bill makes some changes in the no statute of limitations crimes. Are there changes that we would think of from the status quo? In terms of which crimes have a statute of limitations, or are they conforming?
I'm sorry, through the chair, Senator Keel, I want to make sure I'm understanding your question. Are you asking me what is the statute of limitations that's associated with the bill? Or are you asking me, should there be other things evaluated in the current statute of limitations for change?
Mr. Chairman, the question was, what does the bill propose? Okay. I wouldn't necessarily mind recommendations the other way, but first, what does the bill propose?
So let me go to the statute of limitations that's here in the statute book. Give me just one moment. The current statute of limitations found at Alaska Statute 12-10-010, subsection A8, says that sex trafficking in violation of where it's currently found in statute 1166-110 through 130, that is an unclassified Class A or Class B felony, and that which is committed against a person who at the time of the offense was under the age of 20, for that there is not a statute of limitations. So again, it is sex trafficking where the victim is under the age of 20. That's what would apply there. And then if I go to the bill, and if it's outside of what I just described, then the statute of limitations would be 10 years. So then if I go to the bill for that same statute, which is found in section 15, pages 10 and 11, and the only changes to the statute are actually found at the top of page 11, lines 2 and line 6. And what it's doing in those circumstances is it's saying sex trafficking in violation of 1141-340, which is sex trafficking in the first degree, all subsections, and then sex trafficking 1141-345, which is sex trafficking in the second degree, all subsections. And then it talks about human trafficking down on line 6. In those instances, the statute of limitations is eliminated or made so that there is no statute of limitations for those highest level crimes, regardless of the age of the victim. That's the change that happens. So currently, if you were to have sex trafficking in the first degree, which is the forcing somebody to engage in sex trafficking through the use of force, you would only have an unlimited statute of limitations if the victim was under 20. But if the victim was over 20, if they were 21 years old, then you would only have 10 years to prosecute that crime. And so you get to that 11th year, then you would no longer be able to prosecute that crime. The change here says doesn't matter what the age of the victim is. If you are forcing somebody to engage in that conduct, then they can be prosecuted for it without the statute of limitations. And the recruitment, which is what's in 1141-345, likewise, there is currently a 10-year statute of limitations on that type of conduct. This would eliminate that so that there is no statute of limitations for recruiting someone into that conduct. I hope that helps answer the question.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, both trafficking someone and bringing someone into sex trafficking, whether by force or by inducement that's not force.
Correct.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Senator Keel. With no other questions before the committee, it is kind of quiet without Senator Myers here. But with no other questions before the committee, at this point, we'll put Senate Bill 189 aside, and we will bring Senate Bill 187 back before the committee. That is regarding sex offenses. Are there any further questions for the Department of Law regarding 187?
Mr. Chairman, for public safety, if I may.
Say again?
For the Department of Public Safety, if I may.
Department of Public Safety, who is available with Department of Public Safety?
Mr. Chairman, while they figure out who they want to send up, maybe I'll ask the question, and that might even affect their decision, if that's all right with you.
Sounds good.
The question has to do with the registry and the need when someone who is subject to registration plans to travel. So I presume this is going to mostly affect people who are no longer under probation or parole, but still need to be registered. When they plan to travel, there are a number of new requirements in the bill. I think one of which is that they give the department their plans in person. I guess could we hear from the department about why in person is vital as opposed to online or by telephone or some other method?
Sounds like an excellent question. Are you prepared to put yourself in the record and offer some insight?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I am. And good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kelly Howell. I am the Special Assistant to the Commissioner for the Department of Public Safety and also the Legislative Liaison for the Department. I do want to confirm that we have Lisa Perrington online for questions as well, and she does oversee the Sex Offender Registry. I am prepared to answer the question and then defer to her as well if for any additional statements. But essentially, Senator Keel, through the chair, the requirement for the in-person notification for out-of-state travel, one is essentially to comply with the Federal Sex Offender Registration and Notification Act, or SORNA. Arguably, SORNA requires in-person registration and notification of those circumstances. It also assures that that person is actually still present in the state prior to departing. However, you know, the department does understand that given Alaska's vast geography and where offenders may currently be residing, it may be difficult for them to appear in person and is amenable to any suggestions that the committee may have. And with that, Mr. Chairman and Senator Keel, I would ask if Lisa Perrington has any additional statements she'd like to make on that particular question.
And so we'll go to Lisa Perrington, if you're listening in. And a question I would have would be, is there a problem with the state statutory law conflicting with federal requiring in-person and thus not requiring in-person? But we'll go to Lisa Perrington. If you've been listening in, if you have anything to offer, please state your name, any affiliation, and your location, and begin any testimony.
For the record, Lisa Perrington, Criminal Records and Identification Bureau Chief with the Department of Public Safety, and calling in from Anchorage today. Through the chair, Senator Teal's question regarding the in-person registration, as Ms. Howell stated, primarily the requirements are to comply with the Federal Sex Offender Registration and Notification Act, also known as SORNA, for the in-person reporting to the registry. It's reporting to their local law enforcement, I guess, is where we have traditionally treated that with the Sex Offender Office, with not just travel requirements, but also with change of name, change of address information. We take that where they go to their local law enforcement office to report that information.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Perrington. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's helpful. The next subsection caused me a little bit of confusion. I guess I'm on page 6 of the bill, and it has to do with if someone who is on the registry and is away from the home address they provide, I think that's what the cross-reference is, for 7 days or more, they need to notify the department in writing of the address. And again, I guess my thought goes to people who are no longer on probation or parole. They're not being supervised, but they are on the registry. If someone is traveling, how does the department envision them meeting this requirement if the plans change during the trip?
Senator Keel, through the chair, I defer to Lisa Perrington. I can assume that there is a email that individuals can submit that information to, but I'd like to defer to Lisa Perrington, please.
All right. Once again, to Lisa Perrington, if you for listening in, please state your name again, put yourself on the record.
For the record, Lisa Perrington, through the chair to Senator Keel's question, if the travel plans were to be interrupted, the flight was canceled or they missed the flight, whatever the case may be, those would be extenuating circumstances, and there's an allowance for that in the federal law that governs SORNA that actually has that allowance for unforeseen circumstances. The requirement would then be, as long as that was a documented process, they showed proof that the flight was canceled or that they missed the flight, and then they would look at to immediately remedy the situation as soon as reasonably possible.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Perrington. Follow up?
But, Ms. Chairman, thank you. I guess, and I am focused here on folks who are no longer under state supervision, right? You know, the question, I guess, becomes one of how this registration interacts with the freedom of travel. I took a trip recently where the point of the trip was to have no agenda, and decided at one point to stay extra days with my brother and his spouse. I have some concerns if there's not a way to modify travel plans for someone who is not under state supervision, as long as there is still a way for them to notify the registry. I'm not sure what public purpose we're serving by not allowing them to change the trip except in extenuating circumstances beyond their control. Did I misunderstand that?
Ms. Howell, do you have any insight? Or should we go to – all right. She's referring to Lisa Perrington, if you're listening in.
For the record, Lisa Perrington, through the chair to Senator Keel's question. To be honest, I am not familiar. I would have to look into the change in travel plans. So they originally submitted a plan to travel to North Carolina, and travel plans changed. They decided to go to Disney World in Florida. I'm not certain how that would be addressed. We do have change forms, and that is how they generally notify the registry when there's a change in any of their information. We have forms, and that's how they're meeting the in-writing requirement for any of those change of plans. I would have to look into more of the change in travel plans once they were filed with the registry. I'm afraid I don't have that answer at this time.
Ms. Howell, do you have something to offer?
Mr. Chair, again, for the record, Kelly Howell with Public Safety and through the chair to Senator Keel. As Ms. Purinton was testifying, it reminded me, the purpose of the Sex Offender Registration and Notification Act under the federal law and the National Public Sex Offender Registry is to ensure uniformity among states as offenders travel. And so as Ms. Purinton gave the example of going from one state to another state, if that wasn't part of the initial plan, there is a requirement that the state, Alaska, where the offender resides, notify the other states where that individual is traveling to. So that could be one example of why notifying of any change in travel plans is important.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Howell. Are there any other questions from the committee? And seeing none, just as a reminder, the committee is working with the stakeholders looking to develop satisfactory committee substitutes by the end of next week on both of these bills. But at this point, alibi from people don't understand what alibi is. It's like an extra shot when you're target shooting or something like that. It's the extra one last chance. A question for Senator Hughes.
See what happens, Mr. Chair, when you're talking about wrapping up. My mind's quickly, is there anything? Is there anything?
Quickly would be it before I say wrapping up.
I'm just curious, what shows up on a sex registry? I know a lot of information is gathered, but what can the public view? The name and the address? Is that it? Or can they see the convictions, or what do they see?
Senator Hughes, through the chair, Kelly Howell for the record. I'm going to defer to Lisa Purinton. I know it does contain the information you listed, name and address, but without being able to look at it, I can't recall everything that's currently listed. So she will be able to confirm those details for you.
All right. Ms. Purinton, if you are still there, can you offer any insight?
Through the chair to Senator Hughes. As Kelly Hall mentioned right off the top, I'm not 100%, but I know it is going to be certainly the offender's name, their location, their conviction will certainly be listed as well. Whether they're compliant with their registration requirements or not will be listed on there. And I would have to look at the website to actually be determined, but there's no personally identifying information that is posted on the registry, such as, Social Security numbers, driver's license numbers. That information would not be posted on a public website.
Thank you.
Is there an image?
Through the chair, Senator Showers, yes. The photo of the individual is certainly listed on the website.
Are there any other questions from the committee?
Yeah, as a follow-up to that one.
Senator Hughes?
Do they also have a way so you can, click on a city and see a map location of where they all reside?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, yes. The website database is searchable. You can either search it by a city location, you can search it by zip code and get that specific information. You can type in multiple zip codes to get the offenders that are registered in those areas.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Senator Hughes. With no other questions from the committee, thank you to the invited and public testimony today. And at this point, we'll set Senate Bill 187 aside. Is there any other business before this committee? And seeing none, our next meeting will be Monday, March 7th at 1:30 p.m., and we will be adjourned at 2:28 p.m.